It has been a while. First of all, Happy New Year and welcome back to The Cricket Show. Today, we're going to talk about that glorious thing, the World Test Championship Proteas in the final. Of course, we have to talk all around that because now the World Test Championship cycle is basically over, a few dead rubbers in the mix left to play. And of course, then comes the SA20, some T20 action. South Africa doesn't have any real international action coming up soon, so we'll be focusing on the SA20 on our side. But anyway, let's get started, boys. World Test Championship final. What do we make of the whole beat? How did you find the cycle?
Well, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Obviously, the Proteas making it into the final is a massive surprise. But very, very stoked with what went down over the last two matches. It's going to be interesting to see what happens at Lord's.
No, I agree. It was, regardless what anyone says about South Africa's fixtures going into it, or how this, you know, this thing is set up with the, who you play and who you don't play. We can only play with who was in front of us, and we did what we need to do. 7 on the bounce, 6 to get in. It was brilliant. Excited to see the team in London. I think going into that World Test Championship final, it's going to be a lot of selection questions, but. It's good. It's a selection question where, you know, we've got players that we can pick from rather than, oh my goodness, who are we going to pick from? Are we going to pick the guy averaging 16 or the guy averaging 17? So it's a better place to be in than we were 18 months ago. So that's good to see.
Yeah, no, on Divi's point, you can only beat what's in front of you. The only way to rectify this whole issue of fixturing and who you're going to play in the next test cycle is to perform and put your hand up and say, hey, guys, come and give us a chance. Or come and try and defeat us. So if South Africa can win this World Test Championship, then I think that's only positive for the future. And then there's a better chance of getting those big series. So I think we're on the right spot. And like Divi is saying, I wouldn't even go 18 months ago. I'd just go like 3 months ago, where we were all like, oh, test cricket is going to die. So at least we have a little bit of life now. So it's quite exciting. And I'm chuffed that the boys got the job done. It's kind of as we predicted. We thought they would get through. Probably a little bit more tested, but it is what it is.
I actually don't care because I was always a believer that sometimes in tournaments, the team that wins, they perform really badly, or you least expect them in the beginning, at least. And, you know, it's always like if you go think about cricket tournaments, how the hell did Australia make it there? But then when they come there, they you know, then you're afraid of them and they're there to perform. So I'm happy that they're there. I don't care how they got there. I don't care what people say. The final is in front of you, go out and perform. One point I want to make, and Kuf, I don't want to take words out of your mouth, but you made the point offline that it's a weird setup where you have the 6-month break now until the final. So, you know, you would think, or logic will tell you in a tournament, these are my players in form, right? And we'll touch on them later. Example, Bavuma, we're talking about offline. But, you know, what's there to say that he doesn't get injured or just fall out of form in the next 6 months? So I think that's going to be a big one. Who do you put there? And do we base them on form that was 6 months ago?
Mm. And the one advantage Australia has on that is that they've got another series coming up. I'm not sure exactly when that takes place. Is it closer to the final or closer to now?
It's now. It ends just before the Champions Trophy. So I think the second test finishes maybe about 10 days or 15 days before the Champions Trophy kicks off. There will be a gap in between. There'll be some county cricket, of course. And as we know, quite a few of our lads are involved in that side. Rickleton, Verena, even Patterson. They get a bit bimbled as well.
Yeah. So, but we'll all of those points aside, so Australia will also have to wait a while until playing. The bottom line is that it's a one-off, and anything can happen. So, whether we win it by skill or by the Aussies playing bad or by luck, whatever it is, as long as you get the job done, I mean, the record books are not going to show how you won it.
Now we definitely have a puncher's chance. I mean, if you're in it, you've got a chance. The only other thing I want to say is it was really, really nice that we had a proper test match at Newlands for a change. 4 days, nobody got rolled for under 50. The bowlers had to actually dig deep a little bit. I think that'll stand us in good stead. I mean, I suppose we'll get into the nitty-gritty of the performance a little bit later, but that was really nice to see.
I think I also made this point offline, was that it's crazy to think that that's where we are now in Test cricket, like 1,300 runs plus, match done in 4 days.
It's
ridiculous. And it's not as if, like, when you were watching the game, you didn't think Bears ball. You didn't think these guys are scoring excessively fast. But come the end of the match, for both South Africa and Pakistan, to come out of a match with 1,300 plus and a team getting rolled for under 200 in an innings, I mean, that's pretty crazy to think about, actually.
And it's even more weird because the team gets rolled, you know, like Pakistan's first innings compared to the second innings. They literally followed on the same day, and then there were different sides when they came on. So, yeah, that just goes to show. But in all fairness, also, it was a really good batting wicket.
I think it points big time to exactly what we're saying, though. It wasn't baseball. In Pakistan's first innings, a lot of loose shots. Rizwan's wicket is probably the epitome of that. What on earth was that?
Like, what do you say to your teammates after doing that?
Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, he was going so well.
You just say my role model. You just say my role model is Rishabh Pant. Everything's fine. Everything's fine after that.
And you saw
really clearly, though. How are we going to go there? I want to talk about him.
You want to talk about Pant? Yeah, we'll get there.
Let's not jump around. Let's finish with Rizwan.
I was just going to say, like, the thing is, you saw the clear difference between playing proper test cricket and attacking where the situation arises, when it's appropriate. A loose ball, the field is set up so that you have gaps that you can pick, punish. And when it's not there, you just leave well out to the off stump, block, block, block. In the second innings, Pakistan looked so much better, and they still went pretty fast. Shan Masood and Babar scored well, but they played decent proper cricket. As Doggy said, they made us toil. Good for us on that end as well, because I honestly think we needed it. But also nice to see Rickleton get a big one. When last have we seen a South African get a really big one? Ashim Amla, 2020, was it? At Newlands?
Yeah, look, it was good to see him. Because like you mentioned, he scored pretty quickly, but it wasn't like he was charging down the wicket and, you know, ram shots or the slips or whatever it was. He batted properly at the beginning. He left well. And when he was in his areas, he just timed the ball to the boundary. So it was good to see. I felt kind of bad for him towards the end of the innings. I mean, 300 was staring him in the face. And I think he obviously got the mandate to say, let's go for it and try and up the run.
I just stop you there for a second. He did a piece in the post-match. It was so recently, SuperSport have been doing a nice thing where they cover the game for another hour after the game with a bunch of interviews. And he said he knew that the 300 was there, but he always told himself at some point in the innings he's going to start going for it. So he was completely not disappointed by the whole thing, completely unfazed. He was like, I knew I was going to get out at some point.
Yeah.
So after, basically after 200. After 200, he went for it.
Yeah, exactly. But I just feel bad for him because it almost seemed like, you know, South Africa were looking to declare quite quickly. But Jansen came out and batted, Mirage came out, and the first 10 balls made it look like it was the most difficult wicket to bat on. in the entire series, and you know, ended up 40 odd. KG came out. You know, everyone had a go. So I think if you just batted normally towards the end, you know, and Jansen going from the other end, he would have probably got there quite easily. But and then going into the World Test Championship final, I mean, there's going to be a lot of selection issues from a batting perspective. Tony D'Souza, will he come back into the squad? I mean, that's tough. I mean, we spoke about him getting starts and looking good and then throwing it away or getting himself out or getting out somehow in the 20s and 30s. And that's not good enough, I guess, for a one-off test. Will he retain his spot? That's a big
question. Will he get dropped down to six?
Get dropped down to six and want to leave Mulder.
Mulder going to bat three still. Is this actually... Nah. Are there people out there that believe Deon Mulder is a number three test batsman? Like, who? Who's that delusional?
No, but that's that was to the point that I was going to try and make next. That, and also on Saru's point and Doggy's point as well, is just to bring the two together. That when we're going to choose the team for that final, it's going to be probably on form/confidence. Now, is that form/confidence on this current test form, or however the players are in that space of time, say after the Champions Trophy or after SA20.
I don't care what form Ziya Mola is in. He can't bat three. He can score double hundred or something. But I'm just
glad Stubbs is going down the order.
Yeah,
but I know he didn't perform, but still, I'm glad that he's going down the order.
Point being, I wouldn't put it past Shukri Conrad to do something strange in the lineup for that one-off match.
Fuck it, just put Rabada at three, man. He did well in the first test. Like, if you don't have a number three, just put Rabada at three.
Yeah, you can't score less than
exactly. You
can't score less than fuck.
Exactly. And we're going on about this most recent test. What about Drabada's performance with Janssen, guys?
Yeah.
He showed us Brian Charles.
Yes.
Because even like, why did Beddingham open the fourth innings? I mean, was it to give him some confidence or give him some form to finish the test match?
He asked to. He apparently went up to Shukri and he said, I want to go at it. Like, I haven't scored any runs. Let me go for it. And then I guess it worked.
I mean, but is that how you play yourself into test form? By just having a bright slog? You know?
I don't think so.
Anyway, I mean, I think that the Lord's team will be dictated by who scores runs in the county season. I mean, let's hope some guys put their hand up there. Are they playing with a Duke ball?
I think they should be.
Yeah, that's a consideration as well. I don't know how that affects guys who have never bowled with it before. And there's one other thing I just want to mention is right before the second new ball was due, when Pakistan was going really nicely, I bowled a spell that was magnificent. That I think he got one of the guys and they didn't review it. And we even took the new ball a little bit later because he was reversing it. And I thought that was really, really promising in terms of, I don't know, you know, back in the day when Donald used to come in and try and muster something up out of nothing, or even Dale Steyn. I mean, he did it as well. He was the boss of that. But it was nice to see the youngster actually, you know, kind of when there was nothing on offer, go and sort of make something happen.
Yeah, just going back to the Beddingham issue, I mean, I think he should play. I mean, he said, he hasn't got the runs, but when he's been batting, he looks fine. I mean, he's been timing it nicely. It's just silly strokes, but loose. Probably just needs to tighten up a bit. I mean, scoring quickly, just by him being there, he'll score quickly. He doesn't even have to try. So I think it's just him sort of not being as loose and chasing everything outside off stuff. I think he looked fine. And then on the bowling side, like you said, Quena's that spell before the second new ball was brilliant. And that another selection issue. Now, what does your seam attack look like when you go into...
So on the whole seam attack, another bit of news that came in that whole post-match chat. Shukri said that a day before the Centurion test was the day that they ruled out Andrik Nokia because he had been available and had been working to it, but then broke his toe. So Andrik Nokia is technically available once that toe recovers. He was supposed to be in the side at Centurion.
I'm going to double down on what I said in a few episodes ago. Like, forget that, man. He's great, but one, unreliable, and I don't know what his commitment levels are like. I mean, these guys, they worked hard to get themselves there. And, I mean, give them a shot, man.
I think the one issue is the pace that he offers you at Lord's.
Yeah, but that can go two ways, too, man. I mean, the batsman can use the pace as well. You can make an argument for everything. I think based on principle, I think you shouldn't be keen. And that alone.
Sure.
Obviously, he's a class bowler. But, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to touch before we move on from Beddingham. Remember Horses for Courses also when he's got a first-class career in the UK.
I've just had a look. He averages 45 in his first-class career. I don't know what percentage of that.
Just like 8,000 runs or something. It's killer.
Runs scored in the UK, but I mean, I would imagine a big chunk of it would be.
Yeah, he was a top run scorer in the last county season.
Yeah, so I mean, absolutely. I think he would have to be there and possibly take the number three spot. Themba at four.
Timber at four.
I
think we can all agree on that.
Going back to the first match as well, I think Markram answered Doggy's call there. He put in the performance.
Yeah. It was glorious to see, man.
In his childhood bedroom, probably.
Sleeping in his mother's bed, as you said, Ducky.
You know, the story at least, wherever he was raised.
There were bright spots. There were bright spots all through the series. And in the second match, I think we must also give Pakistan credit for making a game.
Yeah.
I know when Abbas bowled, it reminded me of like a Pollock spell. He was just on the money. On the money.
Put it on a coin. Ball.
And how was that man? Was it the first test? Yeah, the second test, 14 innings. Yeah, that was ridiculous, the number of overs that he bowled.
Absolutely crazy. Man is a bowling machine. And at that very miserly pace, if we could call it that, 120s, upper 120s, kind of what we went on about Dane Patterson for in the past, but we won't go there again. He was a bit unlucky to miss out at Century. I mean, at Newlands. Back-to-back fifers, can't say much. He's probably going to play in England. Like, so I guess lots of issues that are potentially going to come up a little bit closer to that final. We'll break down the squad and talk about all the selection problems as we get there. Of course, closer to the final, as I said. But the rest of the World Test Championship, now, as a cycle as a whole, there's been a lot of ups, downs, lefts and rights. Some interesting performances by various teams. We remember the India-New Zealand series, the performances from Sri Lanka in England, and of course, West Indies' performance in Australia at the time. It also did pretty well in England as well. A bunch of very diverse Test cricket, if you could call it that. Very different approaches to the game. I'm going to ask you guys, from this cycle, what are your most fond memories? What did you enjoy the most? Series-wise, match-wise, performance-wise, individual players? Let me know.
I want to sound like a broken record. But I'm glad the Gavaskars are now on my side with punt. I've been saying this over and over that, yeah, it's nice. It's nice to play T20 in a test scene, right? And it comes off 20% of the time, but 80% of the time it doesn't work, right? And where I felt bad this time was for Nitish Kumar Reddy, because if you look at his recent performances, he's been running out of partners. So come the end, he just has to go for it, right? Then he found a sensible Washington Sundar who was going to stay with him, and he made 100. The guy's in great form, right? And to go and bring it full circle, because I have to talk about Sanju. Sanju was in brilliant form here in South Africa, right? But you could fucking take punt to Australia when you had a more sensible wicket-keeping option. You had KL there. KL could have been your wicketkeeper, but you had an even better, sensible wicketkeeping option in Sanju, who was in form, but you still put this fucking clown in your side. I don't know, it just doesn't make sense to me. But I'm glad Gavaskar agrees with me.
No, and then after that, straight after Gavaskar's comment, he goes and scores 60 of 30.
Yeah, but then again, it comes off 20% of the time. We've been saying this over and over. That's brilliant for test batting. That's brilliant for number 9 in a test.
They also needed him to score a handy, so 60 wasn't cut the mustard. Yeah.
they need him to have a brain as well. Stop chasing stuff outside the off stump.
But you can say that about Virat as well. That's probably my highlight of the test. Virat Kohli not being able to buy a test run.
On that note, I saw a crazy stat. What do you guys think his record is outside of India? What do you think it's like? Just like gut feel.
Probably averages 40 when you say,
yeah, in Australia, he averages pretty well. But outside of that, it's up and down. I think he only averages over 50 against South Africa, Sri Lanka, and maybe so it was 50 against Australia, but it's 40 now.
For all test batsmen who've ever scored over 9,000 test runs, he's the only batsman to not average over 50 away from home against any country. And then you've got guys in any country. And that is crazy. He's the only one.
That's wild. And that is wild.
Yeah. No, you know why? Because they don't take him to Zimbabwe. That's the problem. No.
and then on the flip side to that, Kumar Sangakkara averages over 50 in 7 other countries.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah. It was a mad stat.
Another good one is that between Cummins and Stark, they scored more runs in the series than Rohit and Kohli put together. So, as you say, as Kub said, when it comes off from a number 9 or number 10, obviously everyone knows that Mitchell Stark's wife was on commentary for the most of the series. And she said that he prefers himself as a out and out number 10. If he bats 9, he doesn't know how to bat. So as a proper number 10, the man showed that, look, when it comes off, when it comes off from a number 9 or number 10, then cool.
But we are debating about a proper number 3 and a proper number 1. But no, Stark, I'm out and out number 10. Because that's a batting position now.
hey. The stats would suggest that for him, it actually is. Uzi Khawaja, walking wicket, time to go. Does he play that final?
I think
he has to. Who are they going to pick? They couldn't find an opening batsman for the start of the series.
They could bring Renshaw in.
No. I think you've got to go with the settled side. I think give him one more opportunity. It's probably going to be his last test, maybe.
I would say he's significantly older than I thought he was.
38 now.
He's old.
And what do we think about Gonstas?
I don't know. Somehow we beat around that bush, but let's ask that question. Is he taking it too far? Is he going a bit off the beaten path here, past the line? Or is it good to see all that aggression?
No. I like it.
Yeah. And there was a thing with Pontin, and Pontin said that the first time he met him, I think it was like his BBL debut or something. And in that same conversation, it was something along the lines of, he said, I'm going to do well here, so you better pick me for the IPL. And then he's like, okay, well, you're going to do something again. It's like, Australia next year or something. And he's like, oh no, I'll be in the Australian team by then. So we'll catch up again then. So his confidence is not like a one-time thing now. It's months ago. So I personally, I love it.
I like it because it creates the whole drama. And look, Test cricket is, look, it is, you need a lot more entertainment than just what on the bat and ball. I think those sort of rivalries and animosity between the fans and the media and the players in the media and the players amongst themselves, I like it. It's brave as well. I mean, it's easy when you are a settled test cricketer, got runs behind your name, and then you can go ahead and start sledging people. They're not going to give it to you back. But I mean, you're young and you're up and coming, you must have a go. And,
I think it's a very conscious thing that he's doing. I think it's his sort of way of making a name for himself and trying to burst onto the scene. So
I was more thinking Netflix series, because if you start your career off like this, you know, going for Kohli, going for the top basically, then you've got a Netflix series coming.
I think you buy credits to behave like that with runs that you score, and I'm not quite convinced he scored enough runs to behave like
that. I mean, look, on the flip side of that, there's not many batsmen in the world, period, in any format, that did what he did to Bumrah. That was
similar thing.
in the net, surely it comes off in the nets. But he got away with it for long enough, and the biggest thing that came out of it was very obviously that entire Indian team was rattled. Kohli had a go at him. That shoulder charge, that was purely born out of the fact that they were frustrated. And if that's what he sets out to do, then mission accomplished. Even into the next innings where he didn't score runs, or the next test, he didn't score runs, it still technically came off because he created this alternate focus for India. If you went onto Twitter, for example, you saw that every Indian in the world was worried about Constance, not about the fact that the entire top order for the Indian team looked absolutely shoddy.
Yeah, that Kohli incident.
Except for the young opener. Sorry.
Well.
Jaiswal. He was very, very good. Jeez, I saw him bat for the first time, to be honest, and I watched properly. He's a big deal, that guy.
Jaiswal is attacking cricket that you can enjoy watching.
Now, if Kohli doesn't leave him out to dry, you know, just short.
Yeah, no, that was bad. The run out was batting so nice, and then Kohli ball watching as non strikers in.
He's done it a few times recently, actually. He's done it a few run out things. Yeah.
But I think Kohli needs to start understanding that he's not the biggest name in the team anymore. He's not the guy. I think maybe 8 years ago, Kohli, yeah, fine, if you ran someone out, you know he's going to score runs. But now, you got to take him hits. And I mean, and the guy's running to the danger end anyway. He should have moved. He should have gone and let his team down. Watching. But
if you think of it, take away Kohli's recent form, like if you think of him, I mean, naturally, you think of a white ball player, right? Like any player apart from like maybe, you know, like AB de Villiers or that type of player who you regard as great in all formats. For me personally, when you think of Kohli as a great player, I think he's a great white ball player. I don't think he was ever like the shining light of the Indian Test batting lineup.
He's got a lot of Test runs. I think, we talk a lot here about aggression in cricket and making it look pretty and this and that and all the drama. I think Kohli brought all of that into Test cricket. So when he scored well, everyone remembers what happened that day. He swore at someone, especially in Australia. He made, as we were talking about making your name, he did really well there, taking on some Mitchell Johnsons and people screaming at him, him coming back at them and then blasting 100. I think in the previous series that he played there, 2018 or something, he got like 400s. It was ridiculous throughout the series. So, yeah, to an extent, I agree with you in some senses. Maybe you remember him a bit more for Odia cricket, but
yeah,
great test player.
So the thing for me is I have a soft spot for Kohli, but I think of him the other way around. So when I think of Kohli as a T20 player, I always felt like he didn't fit in. When I think of him as an ODI player, he wasn't the most exciting. I always put him in the longer format of the game, and I think he's a brilliant cricketer for bringing the adaptability and outperforming or surprising us in the T20 scene. You know, when Kohli goes and makes 80 or 40 balls, I think, wow, in a T20 match. Because Kohli, to me, is your player that's going to stay there for 60 balls and probably make 80 and, you know, hold up one end. So I just saw him the other way around. So, you know,
no fair.
But again, yeah.
I think he was probably the best finisher in 50 over cricket at some point, wasn't he? I mean,
he's a chase master, though, right?
The bat through, carry his bat and get to the title.
It makes this whole scenario look a little bit sad because no matter which way you see him, in which format you enjoy him more, he's a class cricketer. And whether we like it or not, over the last 5 years, I know people will try and forget that this is actually what's been going on. But over the past 5 years, he hasn't been that great. He had one good season in the past 5 years and maybe one good innings to win them a World Cup final. Apart from that, it's been pretty much shoddy form across formats.
I'm a bit soft. But yeah, I feel Kohli had a dip. He came back, brilliant cricketer, reinvented himself, came in, you know, but I'm biased. Yeah. So he came and he outshone. But now I hear you guys. It's come to the point where Kohli needs to make that big decision and either be, you know, hung out to dry or say, you know what, guys, I'm going to go out on a bang.
That's my point, kind of.
And the thing with Kohli is the history of performances buys you time, right? I mean, if you're that good, you know, and you perform that well over a number of years, it buys you that extra two or three series that someone who doesn't have that behind them wouldn't be afforded that sort of luxury. And it's a hope, you know. I mean, if he just played 70% of what the player used to be, he'd dominate in this
because we're speaking on hindsight here. Because all of us before the BGT series, we were like, "I know Kohli's gonna do well. He's gonna score."
I think we thought he'll do better than Rohit, which he did.
We said he's gonna do better than Rohit.
We didn't think he's gonna do well. We thought he's gonna do better than Rohit. Yeah, and to be fair, that was a pretty low benchmark to set because Rohit has been. I'm gonna ask you guys a question again. Then, is it retirement time for one or for both?
I think Rohit definitely. Kohli maybe.
I think both. Rohit, I mean, that's obvious, but Kohli, I think
Just holding you there, Divi, in all formats, just Test cricket?
No. Test cricket, I think for both of them, in the longer form, they need to go. I think one day and 2020 cricket, they probably still have a lot in the tank that they can offer. But I just think the longer form of their time's up. And like Kuf was saying, I think from a co-road perspective, yes, you know, the runs are not there. It's time to go. But from a Kohli perspective, I think he brings a lot of like the sort of the baggage and, you know, the fight and stuff like that. And now he just can't back it up and he's a sitting duck. And then he's just someone that just brings pressure on the team by his presence.
Yeah, I think to go out gracefully, I think the most important part is that he needs to go out on his own terms. It can't be to a point where they drop him from the team.
For me, it feels like this. We've been talking this way about Rohit for like about 3 years now. Maybe, you know, his time is up. To a point where now everyone has painted Rohit with this bad brush. Mm-hmm. And Kohli has the opportunity here. Because in 2 years' time, he's going to look like Rohit. He has the opportunity now where the conversations are just starting, you know.
Yes, I agree.
Go on his own terms, I would say.
Yeah, and just with the potential new schedules that's going to come out for the World Test Championship, those guys are going to play each other a lot more, and Kohli might get found out a lot more. So I think for him, it's probably best to call it quits, but on his own terms. Maybe, you know, maybe if they get a series at home against Bangladesh or something, you know, have a go, or Sri Lanka or something like that.
The only official series that they have scheduled so far in Test cricket is for November 2025, a two-match Test series against South Africa in India. So, does he survive Does he survive till then to come and kill some South African dreams and shut all of us up? That would be funny. Now, we're talking about India.
He does a David Warner and score like 300 on his last
match. Yeah. That's very thin for to be considered one of the greats. I mean, he scored 9,000 test runs, averages 46.
It's dropped in the last 5 years, as I said.
If you look at the last five years.
I think apart from 2020, he's averaged around 30 per season. It's been shocking. Like, there will be kids that started watching cricket 5 years ago that only think of Virat Kohli as this guy that makes a lot of noise on the pitch, unfortunately. As Combs alluded to.
Slot into the South African top order quite nice.
You'll be perfect there.
Moza averaging 25, batting at 3.
Batting at 3.
That's a problem.
Quick question, just to bring it back to Australia. Who do you think that South Africa need to fear? Because I think someone like, after we saw how we struggled against Abbas, I think someone like Scottie Boland is going to be hard to face if he plays.
I think he will play because of Hazelwood's injuries. There's been a lot of them recently.
I'm saying let's not forget that we all agree that this is not our best side. We have problems with, you know, everything in that side. So even when people are saying, how the fuck did South Africa get there? Yeah, okay, cool. We're there now. So we can't get any worse. You know what I mean? I would hate if we had the perfect test side.
Doggy reminds us that South Africa haven't had one of those 49s anytime recently. So don't say that it can't get worse too fast. That's what I'm going to say.
No, look, we played decent cricket. I mean,
final over in 3 days.
Overcast wicket in England with a bit of moisture around.
Over in 3 days with 1 day of rain.
Don't say that. You know, you must have 4 or 5 days. I'm taking a whole week off to
watch. Yes, if it rains all 5 days. Oh, I mean, are we
there's
top
a
6 days
reserve.
Even,
there should be, no, there should be reserve.
There's one reserve.
No, but
1 day.
Yeah, 1 day.
Oh,
fuck. But I think you share, because that's what happened with, I think it was in New Zealand.
I don't think you shared. They did, but I don't think you shared. I think when you're so far ahead at the top of the log, you deserve to take the trophy. Currently, the gap is 12%, which is significant when the next, Australia 57%. 12% is significant. That's like 20%. In terms of off the points.
So just going back to your question of who we should fear, I think from a bowling line, they've got a strong bowling attack. Doesn't matter. Stark on his day, Pat Cummins on his day. I think Nathan Lyon will probably be less of a threat. And obviously, Scotty Bowler or Josh Hayes would either way. Both strong bowlers. I think it's a batting lineup with Travis Head. He's someone who could, you know, we can pick up four quick wickets and then he comes in and just takes the game away from us. So we just need to make sure that he's someone that we focus on and get our plans right to him. If we can't get him out, stop him from scoring. I mean, he's good square the wicket and threw a mid wicket as well. So it's somewhere that's probably one of our biggest focal points will be around Travis Head.
Well, I mean, and the guys who have scored runs over there, I mean, they play Ashes series there every other year. So those guys have played a lot of cricket. It's not going to be easy. I think Steve Smith
not probably
scored
all.
A ton of runs there as well. So, I mean, I'd sort of say we're firmly the underdog.
Stars need to align.
I think
that's what I'm saying. Let's go in with no expectation because, you know, not the best looking side. We never had much expectation for these boys and let them go out and surprise us.
We have two things on our side. We keep saying that, yes, we didn't expect a lot from these guys because statistically and perhaps to an extent on caliber, they shouldn't be good enough. But there's something a little bit different with this test side. It seems like a lot that gets done is almost, and I'm not saying it's the same, but almost in a Springboks vein, where a lot of it is done mentally. They seem to go onto the pitch and kind of just have this, at times, a belief that isn't warranted, but they have it, and it works. And I think the one great thing that Shukri's done is, as much as we could talk about who we don't like seeing where in the batting lineup, or who we don't like seeing bowling for the country, they all seem to enjoy playing with each other. And it works for them. So I'm pretty sure backs against the walls, or against the wall rather, they find a way to at least perform.
Let's talk about it, right? He's unconventional. When in doubt, just take your boys out for a smoke break.
Marco and KG then with Shukri Conrad. He called it a Camel Classic-like conversation. We all know what he meant. A little smoke break in the back of the change room. Cricketers and smoking.
No, I don't even want to get into that. The point I'm trying to make is, look, they he's that kind of coach. They like him. And they went and performed for him. It's that kind of team. And taking nothing away from KG and Jansen, they are the best, for me, world-class bowlers. They can bat. They can hold a bat as well. But it's just when you remove the pressure and you do something like that in a pressure situation, it's going to have a smoke. Well, Bavuma, what is Bavuma doing? Sitting in the toilet crying or something, right? Or praying,
An unsung hero that we haven't mentioned at all through the last couple of series, who's played some really clutch knocks, was Kyle Vereen. I mean, his overall record is not great. But he's played some very, very good innings over the last couple of test series.
I don't know about Cumberland, I'll be honest.
Some match saving. I mean, I think he deserves his spot just based on this cycle. Moving forward, maybe not so much, but he has played a few.
He's one of those guys that scores runs when he's on the brink of being dropped. And then
Exactly.
I don't think he's a great keeper. As an actual keeper. But I don't think Rickleton is a great keeper as an actual keeper either.
No, so not just his glove of boy. I mean, it's like, when you look at those, like, appeals for LBW.
It's nonsense.
And he doesn't know what's going on. It's like,
and he's convinced that he's convinced. Outside the
line. I mean, if you can't trust people for your reviews like that, I mean, what's going on? I mean,
he's got a big mouth as well. Always chilling.
So that's his thing, apparently. Like, he does it with, especially with Bedingham. He'd be like, oh, come on, David. And, like, repeatedly, he does it all the time. It's probably funny to him, but it's kind of annoying to listen to. And I don't know. It seems to work for him. He's got 400s.
What do you have to say to a batsman who's scoring runs whilst you've, like, mustered how much of ever runs throughout the last year? Shut the fuck up and do your wicket keeping.
No, I agree.
I agree as well. Look, as I said, it's worked. It's worked. And we kind of have to give him a benefit of the doubt.
Sorry, I want to add one more thing. That
I thought you were saying sorry because I said it worked.
No. Kyle Varane reminds me of Willy Leroux. When Willy Leroux runs down the touchline and he passes a rugby ball into the stands, and then he looks all like bewildered, like he didn't know where he was on the field, and he's got zero spatial awareness. Varane, when he gets caught plumb in front, or gets plays around one and gets bowled, he also stands there like.
It's a radial nerve palsy. It's that forearm that doesn't work. Do you remember Vili and his excuse? Eh?
It just sounds like Varane is Doggy's Vern for me.
No, I think it's for everyone. I think Varane, he doesn't look.
There's a lot missing.
He doesn't look good. With first 10 balls, he looks like a sitting duck. I mean, he looks like number 11 is coming out to bat, and then we're just going to get him out. He's just going to get caught behind the wicket because he chases everything outside of stuff. Caught plumb in front because he walks straight across and plants balls.
Plays something on fifth stump and then feathers it to the keeper and then looks around wondering why the fuck he edged it.
I agree. The wild thing is that when he first started coming through the ranks, and I'm pretty sure part of why he's been retained or given sort of extra chances, because we must remember when Shukri first came in, he dropped Kyle Varane, he dropped Saro Larvia, he dropped Kaya Zondo instantly. So he's probably come back in a lot because of Ashwell Prince. And on that note, condolences to him and his family. He just lost his wife. I think she was terminally ill, lots of things there, but yeah. SGP, unlucky to him. But back to the point. I think he came back in because Ashwell Prince started off at the Cobras with Varane when he was 18. And at that point, he actually looked like he'd be a brilliant top-order batsman for South Africa in ODI cricket. But somewhere along the line, kind of like Viaan Mulder, it just hasn't come to what you would have thought it would come to. But yeah, we've spoken quite a bit about South Africa. We've spoken quite a bit about the World Test Championship. Just one more quick question, as a quick question. Your favorite performer of the year? Everyone give me one person. Could be a batsman, could be a bowler. Any country in the World Test Championship.
I'll go KG. I think he's carried that South African bowling attack on his back and dragged them across the line. He's done it with a bat as well. So I think KG is my favorite performer of the year.
Harry Brook. He was brilliant.
Yeah, I think for me too, I have to side with you, Kuf. Brooke surprised me. Brooke's captaincy also surprised me. I think he's a class act. But I hope he can keep it up. Lovely to see
England sake or for Sunrise's sake?
No, but that's the other thing, right? Like, I rated Harry Brooke. He messed up in the T20. You know, he lost his spot in Sunrise and things like that. It's nice to see a kid come back and make a name for himself in the test. You know now he's going to be a fixture in the one-day format.
No, I will side with Diddy. He tied up to a piece. I think KG's been great. I saw KG's wickets taken stat the other day, and I was very surprised at sort of where it was at and how old he is now. You know, I still remember him as this 18-year-old kid that came along. And I think it's quite sad that we've played so little test cricket, because if we didn't, that guy would have, been up there with Muley or whatever. Anyway, I'll go with KG.
I am going to go a little bit away from both of you, because I think it would be remiss of us to not mention Jasprit Bumrah. I think he's been absolutely incredible. Maybe not the whole cycle, because test cricket in India is tough for pace bowlers, but just, you could literally go just based on the Australia-India series. Fantastic.
But hang on, to touch on Doggy and to touch on you, right? Compare KG to Jasprit Bumrah. KG is 2 years younger. Look at the stats.
KG's played, in fact, more games than Bumrah. Bumrah's, his test career starts a lot later. Remember when
but
he was first
to go again on
shabby looking 24-year-old.
If KG played for England or Australia, he would
Oh yes, no. Not, I will not doubt that at all. But as we'll go back to the question, your favorite performances in the cycle.
Yeah, sure.
And I think
I just want to make the point.
Bumrah in Australia was ridiculous. He was unplayable at times. We'll leave this segment in the words of Usman Uzi walking wicket Khawaja. I got Bumrah'd.